Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder from the Apple. Got a guest with us today, my friend Taryn Sharma. You might have heard him over at Conduct Detrimental. It's a podcast covering the, the intersection of the sports world and the law world, which we'll be able to expand a little bit on during the show today. Taryn's also been employed by the Arizona Diamondbacks, the San Francisco Giants in their baseball operations department. So, of course, we'll have some questions in that area. Taryn, thank you so much for joining the show, man.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure, Tim. Really enjoyed following along with you as you grow your group, and your writing is fantastic. And having the access that you've been able to have recently to the players on our favorite baseball team is amazing. So it's been really exciting to follow along with, and I'm really glad that you allowed me to take part in it today.
Oh, please. It's my pleasure, man. And, you know, just interacting on Twitter, we always have a good time. I said, oh, we have a couple of topics that you might be able to chime in on. Let's go ahead and give it a whirl. And here we go. So I guess right off the bat, I guess, you know, this is kind of fits right into the theme of what's going on right now. The Mets, obviously, the first item on their docket is filling the president of baseball operations vacancy. You know, Sandy Alderson pretty much has made it clear he has no interest in continuing in that hands-on role. I'm sure the organization has their own wishes to go ahead and kind of forge their own path. You know, Theo Epstein's already been kind of pushed out of the situation. You know, in my opinion, it wasn't really the priority, in my opinion. But you still have a couple of big fish out there in Billy Bean and David Stearns. And, you know, do you think a well-regarded, established president of baseball operations is kind of still in the mix for this team?
You know, I hope so. I think that first and foremost, what you want is somebody who wants the job, right? Right. It seems like the last two off seasons, we've been hearing about all these people that don't want the job, and the media reporting on the various complications that come with New York, with working for Steve Cohen. So it's got to be somebody who is wholeheartedly embracing those challenges first and foremost. Beyond that, you know, obviously, all of those, all of the names that you mentioned are great, great baseball minds. They've built great teams. Billy Bean, obviously, the narrative is wonderful in that he was drafted by the Mets, and this is sort of coming full circle if he were to come here. One thing that really intrigues me about that situation is if he could then get Bob Melvin. I'm very impressed by Bob Melvin. Every year, seemingly, the Athletics have so much turnover, and year after year, they're always in contention. And I think part of that is just the tone that's being set in the clubhouse, and Melvin must be responsible for that to a great extent. I know that Billy Bean also has other interests, though. He's been involved in this special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC, which has been all the rage over the last couple of years. And they are nearing a deal with SeatGeek. So I want somebody who's really solely focused on this job. So obviously David Stearns would be a home run hire, super well-educated, very young, energetic. He's had a lot of success in building a team in really a market where they haven't been able to spend a ton. So he's been getting a lot of efficiency out of the players that they have been able to get. Their player development has been fantastic. Their trades have been, by and large, pretty good. The Adames trade, most specifically, kind of turned their season around. And even though they haven't necessarily had the offense that they may have liked at some points, it's been enough to go with the great pitching that they've had. And honestly, the Mets would have taken it at any point during their struggles in the second half of the year. So Stearns would be great. The thing is that, as we know, the Mets tried for Stearns last year and were rebuffed by the Brewers. I don't think that Brewers ownership has any desire to let go of what they know to be a really good front office person in Stearns, who is already running the show. So it's already going to be difficult for the Mets to give any sort of promotion. Other names that I would be really interested to see the Mets take a look at. Look, the Indians went 80 and 82 this year with pretty shoestring budget. They faced tons of injuries, and they didn't have Terry Francona for, I think, most, if not all of this season. I would be on the phone trying to get Chris Antonetti to maybe look at an offer to be able to come over to New York. I would really like to see what Antonetti would do. But if you can't get Antonetti to bite, if the Indians don't want to let him go, if they're not able to give him the promotion that would allow them to interview, Mike Chernoff is from New Jersey. He played shortstop at Princeton. He's been in this GM role for 6 years now, and he was GM when they went to the World Series in 2016. And mind you, they made some really big trades down the stretch that year, Andrew Miller being the most notable, in order to go on that run. And they were really impressive that season, had a great young core, which they've now had to trade from as they got more expensive. But I would really like to see what Chernoff's interest would be and what he might be able to do with the budget that we think that Steve Cohen is capable of providing this team.
Yeah, and I think that's probably part of the allure that's going to be drawing potential candidates in, is that, yeah, this isn't the Mets of the last ownership group. This isn't, this is an organization with, by all accounts, eyes on the future and with, goals of bringing their organization up to snuff in every regard. And I think that really starts with this hire. And, I think, like, we both agree on, experience is most definitely key here. You want someone who can take the keys and drive. And I think that anyone you mentioned, I'm certainly intrigued by Antonetti. I think also East Coast base. I believe he's from Connecticut. I want to say him and Omar Minaya's 10 years in Montreal overlapped. I'm not 100% on that, but.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I want to say Antonetti started in Montreal, but I'm not sure if their 10 years overlapped. But, you would have to imagine that they're exploring all their avenues. I know that there was reports this week that Brandon Gomes in Los Angeles was being, tossed about as possibly more of a general manager hire. But, you'd have to imagine that all these things are going to kind of fall as dominoes, I guess. Do you think – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. And I saw DePodesta was mentioned as well. He's a guy that has experience both in baseball and now with the Cleveland Browns in football. So that's another interesting name, at least for somebody who's going to kind of maybe be a chief baseball officer, kind of an architect of a front office. He brought in Andrew Berry in Cleveland, who's done a fantastic job. So I would be interested to hear from them as well.
Oh, for sure. I think, if that truly is an option, I saw that report floating around on Twitter, I guess it was Sunday. And I guess the account that tweeted it out isn't necessarily a news outlet. So I was very hesitant to jump on it, but in theory, I think that would be it. That would be huge. But, he's, of course, he has history with the organization here. He's got history with Sandy Alderson. He recently did, I believe he re-signed or signed a contract extension to stay on as the chief strategy officer with the Browns. So I'm not sure how, inclined he'd be to make that move. Right. From I guess any reports or any interviews that he's done, it seems like he's really, really happy doing what he's doing. But if that's on the table, oh my goodness, that would be huge. I'm curious to see. I know the Mets, when they hired Zach Scott from the Red Sox, they had to put a stop on hiring any front office people from the Red Sox organization. That expires at the end of this offseason. Raquel Ferreira, who again in the Red Sox organization for going on, I think a little bit more than two decades, all the experience in the world, has been towards the top of the baseball operations chain in Boston for some time now. I would, you know, that personally, that's my pick. I think that she has all of the experience necessary. I think that she has the connections necessary. I think that would be a truly a great hire. But yeah, again, you have to see if these little hurdles can be cleared.
Yeah, I saw that you wrote that, and I also think that that's a very interesting idea. It's definitely very forward moving idea. I'm not sure what exactly her roles have been in that, because she's the assistant general manager, but I'm not sure exactly which parts of the operation she's overseeing. But that has been such a good organization for so long, as we know, under the Fenway Sports Group. So anyone who's there has experience winning, and you know, even this year, like, that roster doesn't necessarily look great, and they haven't been that great at certain times, but here we look and they're up 2-1 on a 100-win Tampa Bay club.
Yeah, it's been a pretty fun postseason so far. I have Milwaukee and Atlanta playing on mute in the, I guess I could see it in my mirror in my office, yeah. But you know, it's somewhere that the Mets should at least be striving to be. I think I wrote about it this week at the Apple. This should be all the motivation they need to kind of put the wheels in motion for what's to come. And that all really starts this winter. I mean, even past the front office decisions, which there's going to be plenty, especially if they bring in a new president of baseball operations, you know, any analytics or R&D hires that they made over the last year, you know, everyone's going to kind of have to assimilate now, and that's fine. But then you get to the on-field decisions, and you still have to hire a manager now. We have a lot of the existing core coming off of a very tough season for a lot of these guys, and you know, I guess some of the decisions being, or some of the options being tossed around, have gone from, you know, slight overturn to complete overhaul. So, you know, like I said before, it's kind of going to be dominoes, but I wanted to ask you about, because again, this core had built the value of themselves up over the last few years. And then this season, in most cases, that was degraded, you know, substantially.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where you have these varying ups and downs, you know, you were in baseball ops, you were in Arizona, San Francisco, and of course, when you go front office to front office, or even just department to department, you have different, I guess you want to keep the ideals uniform, but everyone has different opinions of value, especially when you go organization to organization. But are there generalities? Like, if you're just looking at this roster, unbiased, looking at Michael Conforto, well, Michael Conforto is a free agent now, so maybe like a Dominic Smith. Dominic Smith from, you know, 2019, 2020, even going back a little bit to 2018, really just hit another gear. He broke out, as you would say. And then 2020 comes and boom, you know, to the floor in most cases. He had a couple of nice peaks, but that was, for the most part, that was about it. I believe MLB trade reference, trade rumors has his arbitration number pegged at $4 million next year. You know, is this the guy who are you looking to trade him based on last year? And not just Dom Smith, just in general, someone who did have such a dramatic fall off. Is this, you know, how would a team that you were overseeing handle something like this? Are you going to start shipping off these guys who are under contract for the next 2-3 years in some cases, who have track records? Or is it like, hey, you know, let's just go ahead and start fresh.
Yeah. So maybe the teams that I worked for aren't the best example, because both teams lost like 98 games when I was working for them. But the year after I left Arizona, they had more or less the same core that they did in 2016. But sometimes a fresh voice coming in, sometimes a fresh look from a player development perspective really helps these guys. I would not move the guys that you mentioned. I'm thinking about McNeil also.
Sure.
You talk about the East Coast Dodgers, right? Like, that was what Steve Cohen said, that he wanted the Mets to be, the East Coast Dodgers. What do the Dodgers do really well? it's not that the Dodgers go out and they buy all the players. Obviously, their financial power allows them to trade for a Mookie Betts knowing that they're going to be able to pay the money to re-sign him to that mega extension, right? But the Dodgers also find guys and their own guys, and they develop them. So now we look at San Francisco this year. A lot of those guys are – they look like they should be experiencing the biggest downturns of their careers. Right. In fact, guys like Posey and Crawford, Belt, it looked like the prime years of their careers were over, and a couple of small changes, and they're suddenly carrying this team to 107 wins. That in a revamped pitching core, but even with the pitching core, right? It's Logan Webb, who I think had ERA north of 5. I'm not sure what the advanced metrics were on it, but not great performance in limited duties over the last couple of years. And then this year, his slider is elite.
He's been
phenomenal.
Oh, right? My goodness, so nasty.
So I would really hope that the Mets don't give up on these younger players. They're not at the age where you say on the aging curve they're necessarily going to be falling off anyway. So I'd like to see what they can do to at least rehabilitate their value, but more importantly, contribute. A couple other factors are in play there. With the front office people out, obviously you're always impressed with people who are in the player procurement. Their algorithms can show you which players you should be targeting. But I was always almost more impressed with the people that were working with player development to use numbers to improve the talent that's already on the roster. That is the biggest thing that I think that the Mets need to be looking for in anybody who's going to be heading up their front office, is somebody that has at least some experience with player development. There are good players on this major league roster, and some of them have just kind of lost their way. So I want to see McNeil getting back to being a gap-to-gap hitter who can, occasionally get a hold of one. And I want to see Dom Smith be, a doubles guy and somebody who's going to hit for game power. And we got to figure out why exactly that didn't happen this year. And psychologically, I think that the past couple of years have been very difficult for everybody. And that includes these players. So I'd like to see, if things continue to get better, that, maybe next season is better for them. And then, if it's not, you're going to know at least in the midway point of the season. And then you can start talking about, blowing it up and dumping those salaries. But I would really like to see whether 2019 was an aberration or whether 2021 was the aberration. Because, I think that these guys have a lot of talent.
Sure. And you can look up and down the arbitration list this year and say, wow, there's a lot of talent there. And I think, when all said and done, I believe the estimates have them around $50 million in arbitration money. And yeah, that puts a nice dent in payroll. You also have to assume that there's going to be a little bit of tinkering there. From what we've heard from JD Davis so far, I guess since the season's been out, there's been a couple of quotes come out, and neither of them are all that flattering about the situation inside the clubhouse. And I think he said it himself that he's it's looking like he's out of here. And, honestly, I like JD Davis as a player. I think his bat is terrific. I think there's work to be done defensively, but in a DH type spot, or even in a bench role on a National League team, well, there'll be a DH spot everywhere next year. We'll get to that after the break, by the way. I think there's certainly going to be opportunities for him to land on his feet. But again, though, these levels of kind of tinkering, like, let's cut bait on this guy or that guy. But I am also a proponent of keeping this core somewhat together. And I think I've said it on the show in the past. Maybe not all of these guys are quote unquote starting caliber players on a World Series title team. Granted, yeah, Dom Smith is not a left fielder, and he's done a really, yeah. really good job of kind of settling in out there, and is more than playable. I believe he was just under average with regards to OAA on Statcast. I believe he finished the year at -2 out there, and that's considering he's a first baseman. That's not that bad.
Hitting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry to talk.
No, stop.
If Dom is hitting, that's more than playable. I agree with you.
No, for sure. And like you were saying, you know, I think I want to say that some people maybe were sucked in by, because Dom did have a power surge from 2019, 2020. He's hitting a lot more home runs than, especially than he was in the minors. You know, if he settles in to be a 20 homer, 30, 40 double guy, that's great, because he's hitting 280. And you know, when Dom is right, he's still very, very, very much a positive asset for any team that he's on. And with now he has defensive versatility, and, you know, with the DH even more so. And I think that's kind of how Jeff McNeil fits into things. Like, you know, he can give you average to above average defense at, what, three different positions. Before this season, he had the highest batting average in the majors, if that's your thing out there, for, you know, since his debut. He, you know, he's, again, most certainly a difference maker. He brings a net positive by far to the table when he's right. I'm just not one to start cutting bait on these guys now. You know, but the new regime is certainly going to have their hands full with these, I guess, types of decisions. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Michael Conforto? I mean, as far as him accepting stuff like that, that's going to be a decision for him and Boris to make, and that's going to be a doozy. Because, you know, his value's plummeted, and do you take your long-term money now? Do you bet on yourself? But I guess I kind of want to hear your takeaway on the situation, I guess, from the other side of the table, as you might say.
Sure, yeah. And to your point about McNeil first, I liked what you said on your previous podcast with Mark Healy about him being a super utility guy. I think that he is the perfect kind of Chris Taylor, Swiss Army knife guy that you want to have to be able to plug into these various roles. I really liked that. As far as Conforto goes, I almost think that I like the idea of moving Nimmo to a corner and signing an everyday center fielder or trading for one a little bit better. I think Conforto throughout his career has shown to be a really streaky hitter. When he's right, he's really dangerous. But I'm not sure how much that's going to cost. And the other guys as part of the core, they're ARB eligible right now, but they're going to get expensive as time goes on in the next couple of years. So I know that there's no salary cap or anything like that, but I wouldn't want the front office to be hamstrung by a big contract, especially if you know, it turns out that he's going to be on the low end of pendulum swing that he's sure. had throughout his career.
Yeah. Like if he doesn't swing back and you're locked in for $20 million a year for the next four or 5 years, you know, that could, again, for a big market team, it might not be that big of a pill to swallow, but again, for a team with visions of really taking things to the next level. Yeah. If you got a 220, you know, high seven, low 800s OPS guy kind of weighing you down, it hamstrings things. That's a really good way to put it. We're going to take a really quick break. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So and just one more thing about Conforto. I like Conforto. I think he's a good fielder. And I think part of the thing that all of us really liked about the 2019 team is that so many of them were homegrown, and Conforto came up during that 2015 pennant run too. So I think for a lot of us, it gives us good memories of that time. But I don't want the front office to break the bank over it.
Yeah. No, I think if the team is willing to come in at 5-125, it's Mike, we wish you the best. I think I said that word for word last week. My apologies. Yeah. Guys, real quick, we're going to take a break, hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast, called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And welcome back once again. We are here with our buddy Taryn Sharma. If you're not familiar with the podcast, Conduct Detrimental, you can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's really, really entertaining. Those guys have a lot of fun over there. Everybody has a lot of fun over there. And we're talking about a little bit of everything. We talked about the front office. We talked about, I guess, internal evaluation of your roster, of all that fun stuff. And boy, we're going to have to do a part two on a lot of this. But before we close out, I did want to ask you, buddy, about the upcoming CBA, because before anything else can happen, that sort of has to be worked out. And I guess from my point of view, it seems like nobody really wants to cross the bridge of a work stoppage. I think it would just be a black eye on the game right now. And nobody needs that from players or league standpoint. But I guess what are the parameters? What should we be expecting? Should we be expecting something really a nasty fight? Or do you think this is going to be easily worked out? Do you think these sides have ideas of what they want coming into this? Besides the obvious?
Tim, when has baseball ever made anything easy? I don't think it's going to be easy. The baseline that everyone should know is that on December 1st, the collective bargaining agreement is going to expire. So they've been in talks since this summer in earnest. And Tim, do you remember the 94 strike? I was one, so I don't.
Oh, yes. But I was 11, but a very a rabid baseball fan. So, yeah, I mean, again, I felt that crushing blow as a rabid 11-year-old baseball fan for sure.
Yeah. And so did that affect your consumption of the game going forward then?
No. I waited. I counted the days until it came back. And when it came back, I was right back into it. But a lot of the country wasn't.
Right. Yeah. And I think that in the case of a lot of people, it took almost until the big home run chase in, 98, for people to come back all the way. Right.
I like to kind of hang that on Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's record. That really sparked it. That, you know, you cut into your evening news or your evening sitcoms on ABC, they cut into it and put it on. It was really important stuff. And I think that kind of got things going. And then, you know, 98 was awesome. I mean, we all, I was 15. I knew what was happening. We had all read about, the Andro in McGuire's locker, but still it was entertainment. And I guess that turned me into a bit of a cynicist. Cause it's like, you kind of saw behind the curtain, but it was still kind of fun. See, so a mess, you know, I guess, forget it. Let's just have a good time. But you don't want to have to climb that mountain again, right?
No, absolutely not. And I think that actually, you know, for so many years, baseball has taken this heat over not marketing the young stars. Finally, they are. We've got Tatis, we've got Otani, we've got Soto, and it's really great for the game that kids can see these guys and see the flair and the fun that they play with, the pure like childlike joy. And it would be a real shame for baseball to lose that. But the fact is that money is going to be the primary determinant here. And so that gives me serious fears about a lockout. And at the very least, I do think that this is going to go past the deadline. I would be surprised if they reach the agreement before December 1st, but it would be a very pleasant surprise if they did.
Now that kind of, you know, puts a crimp on the rest of the offseason if things can't get resolved, you know, quickly. You know, I guess things don't really start heating up a whole bunch until after the winter meetings anyway, or during the winter meetings. And, you know, pushing all of that back. And then, you know, let's say you go into the new year, the new calendar year, with, you know, just maybe getting your wheels rolling in the off season. You know, nobody wants to head into spring training with a laundry list of stuff still left to do.
No, definitely not. And like you said, that is going to affect everything, because that's the difference whether you have, you know, if there are any new time-saving rules that they want to put in, those would come in during these discussions. If the NL is going to have the DH, that would happen during these discussions. And so you asked about the parameters earlier, and I want to make sure that I do a good job of responding to that. So from the owner's perspective, what they're looking for is the greatest amount of cost certainty possible. And if you look specifically, arbitration is a source of cost uncertainty. So when there's cost certainty, meaning the owners know how much they're going to have to spend on a year-to-year basis, mm-hmm. that means that their franchise values are going to go up. And we don't have to look any further than the NBA franchise values. The NBA, before the salary cap came in, was really struggling as a league. But once they got the salary cap, then the value of each individual franchise has increased so much, and now it's billions of dollars each. And that would, you know, that would happen in baseball too, but I think it's a terrible deal for the players. What the owners have leaked is that they suggested a $1 billion pre-arbitration pool, which would be tied then to future revenue. That is, in essence, a cap. It's more of a cap than the soft cap that we have right now with the luxury tax. They've also leaked that they want to create a salary floor, but then they want to have a much lower threshold for the luxury tax, and they want the luxury tax to be a greater percentage. So the lower the luxury tax is, and the greater the percentage that they're going to charge on every dollar over that threshold, the more of a chilling effect you have upon the owner spending money. If you look right now, a lot of the teams are kind of concentrated right below that luxury tax number. Every year around the trade deadline, what do we hear about? Are we going to go past the luxury tax? Are we going to go over, or are we not going to go over? So the owners are already kind of treating this as a cap. And so therefore the front office has to treat it that way as well.
Right.
So those are the kind of really big sticking points right now. I think the players are trying to look for a way to get the number of years that a player would have to play for service time to elapse to be lower than the current 6 years. This deal that they suggested with the pre-arb pool, they also suggested, the owners did, universal free agency at 29 and a half years old. So that would be good for a guy like Aaron Judge. He would be a free agent this offseason instead of next offseason. But it would be terrible for a guy like Soto, who would then be under team control for basically 10 and a half years, if you consider that he came up when he was 19. So I think there's still so much to be worked out. The only things that we've heard so far are the things that they want us to hear. And they're supposed, you know, they're leaked on purpose. It's supposed to make one side or another look good. Like, look how magnanimous the owners are, that they want to do this $1 billion pool currently, I think that the arbitration pool for those players is maybe like $700 million. So it is an increase over that. But yeah, there's so much to be worked out, Tim. And that's what that makes me nervous. I really hate for the baseball season to be pushed back.
Yeah, I think that's the last scenario they want to play out is a season being shortened, even being jeopardized of coming that close. It just it puts such a nasty shine on whatever this, you know, this is a beautiful sport. It's a beautiful game. And, you know, it's just so simple. And at times it's made so difficult to enjoy. But, you know, I did have a question. If, you know, if let's say the de facto cap were in place, what about teams like Tampa Bay who can operate? And again, they've done, I use this term loosely, a good job. And in realistically, they've done, you know, player development and getting the most out of their guys. They've done a phenomenal job, but I'm quick to praise it just because of, you know, the situation they're in. You know, from a front office standpoint, yes, you know, they've done an unprecedentedly good job of putting a winner out there. From an ownership standpoint, and again, you know, being in Tampa, as we've seen, can't be easy. You can barely fill a stadium, and it has to be the postseason to do so, pretty much. Do you see a salary floor being implemented there? Like, you know, for and we know the usual suspects here, but it's Tampa Bay is really a I guess it's a tricky, a very unique situation, just because they're able to do so well, but they're, you know, I believe, you know, only the Pirates had a lower active payroll than them this season.
Yeah. So you bring up an interesting point, good from the front office perspective, but I have some friends, not that are Tampa Bay fans, but they're Oakland fans, and that's pretty similar situation. Sure. And I don't think that that's like the most fun team to follow. It's not that they haven't had success. Arguably, they've had just as much success as the Mets have. But the idea that you don't know who's going to be on the roster from year to year, the idea that a guy like Marcus Semien, who's from the Bay Area, could, you know, they balk at spending the qualifying offer on him. And then he goes and what sets the second base home run record for a really fun Toronto team. That's got to be tough. So good from a front office perspective, but not something that I would necessarily want to follow as a fan. The salary floor, the $100 million salary floor that was that is supposed to be proposed by the major league owners. There was some interesting phrasing in there. They said that would be paid for by the lower luxury tax threshold. And I'm not sure exactly what that means. Like if it's a salary floor, then just make them spend $100 million. What's the issue there? But paid for makes me think that they're going to be compensating the teams that don't want to spend over $100 million. I'm not exactly sure. So that would be something interesting to know about. I think seven teams would have been below that $100 million mark this year. And that does affect the number of good major league jobs that are out there. And it also affects the, you know, every day as a minor leaguer that you spend in the big leagues, that's a big pay bonus that you're not getting at the minor league level. So it affects all of those people. It's not just the people that we think of being on the 25 man roster. So yeah, again, there's so much to be sorted out, and that's why I'm really trying to enjoy this postseason as much as possible. I'm really very nervous about what is coming next, because I'm not sure how close they are to an agreement, and we might not know until right before one is signed. But I would hate for the players to give up too much, and because you know I want them to be well. They're the ones that are putting their bodies on the line.
Right. Right. And that's kind of how this motor goes. And the closer they get to that deadline, and even if they go past it, the closer they get to pitchers and catchers reporting, the more and more leverage the players lose. I know that it kind of evens out because the owners will be the ones losing money in the long run. But It just,
they're way more able to bear the brunt of that, right?
They can absorb that. Yeah. It's who can outlast who. And then, you know, the players, you know, together, sure, they are a well-off group, but they're not like the 30 Major League Baseball owners. And that's
not, it's not an enviable position, I think, to be in either side's shoes right now. But, you know, if I was having to choose between the two, I'd much rather be an owner.
Oh, of course. they'll get the brunt of fans and people who see it for what it is. And that's justified. And you know what? If I had billions of dollars, I'd say, I'd be pissed off too. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I guess that's just the way of the world, as messed up as it is. Oh, good for us for keeping it PG today. I don't think I cursed once. Good for us. Taryn, before we go, you know, fill me in on fill everybody in on conduct detrimental a little bit. What are you guys doing on that end?
Yeah, thank you so much. So Conduct Detrimental is a podcast group. We have a website, and we really pride ourselves on being at the intersection of sports and law. We have we're covering the St. Louis trial against the NFL. They're suing the NFL, the Rams franchise, and Rams owner Stan Kroenke in St. Louis Circuit Court. That trial is supposed to kick off in January. There's been some legal developments that we've been covering in a three-part podcast series. It's two attorneys, Dan Lust and Dan Wallach. Dan Wallach is a sports betting guru. Dan Lust is like a do-it-all, and they're both litigators, and they have great perspective on sports law, and they're gracious enough to let me come on sometimes and be able to do what I'm doing with you today. And we have a website, it's conductdetrimental.com. And we have a newsletter that I've been writing that goes out every week on Fridays, and you can sign up through our website. Would love for whoever's interested to check it out. Feel free to reach out if you'd like to write anything that's in that sort of realm for our website. And thanks so much, Tim. I really appreciate the time. Where should I send my invoice for the $50 to $100 appearance fee?
Oh, you could send it right over to what's his name. Oh gosh. And now like you put me on the spot. Now I can't remember his name.
Oh, Dan Clark.
Dan Clark. Send it to Dan Clark. Oh damn. You set me up too. And I whiffed. My goodness. I knew where you were going with it too. And I'm like, inside my head, I'm like screaming like, oh God, what is his name? It happens. Taryn, do you have a pick for a World Series winner? I'm sure, I know we're only in the divisional rounds right now, but anyone jumping out to you?
Well, I'd love for the Giants to win, but I think it's going to be the Dodgers. I think I picked Dodgers over Astros in six.
Okay. I had Milwaukee, Chicago, and I'm not looking good right now. So we shall see. Everybody, if you're not following Taryn on Twitter, it's TK Sharma Law. That's TK SHARMALAW on Twitter. Of course, as we said, the podcast is Conduct Detrimental. The Twitter page there is Con Detrimental. And available anywhere you listen to podcasts, and you'll see the links for the website and stuff on the page there. And Taryn, I can't thank you enough for coming and kind of filling us in on the gaps that we don't really, we're not all that well versed in, man. Like, you know, you show me a Fangraphs page or something, I'm in, but boy, once it gets to the CBA stuff, I'm just like, oh, you have to hire a president of baseball operations. Cool. Hire the best one.
No, what you're doing is awesome, Tim. And I love listening and I love reading your writing. It's fantastic. And I'm happy to come back anytime you'll have me.
Oh, thank you so much, man. And most definitely, we'll have you back very soon. Everybody, you heard us list off everywhere you could find Taryn's work. You know where to find us. We will be back next week. We have guests literally lined up through the month of October. So look out for that. And you know the sign off. Let's fucking go Mets. There's my curse. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.